The Adepta Sororitas are a division of the Ecclesiarchy, the one singular church of the Imperium of Man, which guides the worship and praise of all humanity towards that of the God Emperor. The Sororitas, who are more commonly known as the Sisterhood, serve a multitude of roles throughout the Imperium, ranging from the Order's Famulus, who act as diplomats and advisors to high-ranking imperial agents, to the Order's Hospitaller, who organize and operate within the various hospitals and medical facilities across the galaxy. Whilst they perform many non-violent missions and act as a vital part of the Imperium, they are perhaps best known for their Order's militant, the Sisters of Battle. The all-female coven of warrior women are famed across the galaxy for their unwavering faith in the Emperor, as well as for their ruthless efficiency in purging the many enemies of man, which they do so with a burning sense of retributive fury. It is a common mistake to regard the Adepta Sororitas and the Sisters of Battle as being one in the same, when in actuality they are functionally separate. Whilst yes, almost all within the Imperium will be familiar with both groups, the Sisters only act as the militant arm of the Adeptus Sororitas, who themselves exist as a non-military branch of the Ecclesiarchy. They are most commonly called upon to deal with issues of foul heresy, where the misguided and estranged citizens of the Imperium have willingly shunned the teachings of the God Emperor, all to seek out powers from tutors who lurk within the darkest recesses of unreality. In these cases, the Sisters will descend, ready to purge and wipe mankind's slate clean of the taint of treachery, burning away any remains which may continue to fool and lead the lost sheep of man astray. As such, the interests of the Sisters of Battle often has some overlap with that of the fabled Inquisition, who are infamous for their ruthless opposition to even the faintest rumor of heretical activity. Whilst they exist as separate organizations, the two groups have become rather intertwined. And as we will soon discuss, we will uncover as to the reasons why the Sisters of Battle have been appointed as the chamber militant of the Inquisition's own Ordo Hereticus. In any case, today we shall investigate the history of the Sisterhood. We will begin by learning of their founding tale, through to their turbulent role within the heretical Reign of Blood, before finally ending with their Reformation, which solidified the Sisters of Battle into their current state. In order to understand why the Sisterhood was founded, we must first understand the landscape of the Imperium during some of its most corrupt and dark of times. The earliest records of the Adeptus Sororitas places their founding date as having occurred at some point during the 36th millennium, during a tumultuous period known as the Age of Apostasy. It had been preceded by a slow yet unrelenting expansion of the Ecclesiarchy, which had grown from but another cog within the vast engine of the Imperium, to becoming perhaps the most influential and powerful group upon Terra. Furthermore, the head ecclesiarch had gained a truly unprecedented level of control over the various branches of the Imperium, to the point where his directives were seen as being as more important than of those from the High Lords. The actual mission of the Ecclesiarchy had also shifted from that of venerating the God Emperor into enforcing the will of the ecclesiarch, with every citizen now being subject to the large tithes necessary in maintaining such a sacred organization. As stated, the level of influence and control which the Ecclesiarchy had gained over the Imperium meant that their ministers could dictate the policies and strategies of the High Lords. This meant that every single decision which could steer the path of the Imperium could only be enacted if it had the support of the watchful and meddlesome ecclesiarch. This reverential position at the head of their organization was tremendously bolstered during this period, to the point where it was rather worrying to the other High Lords, who now found their titles as being somewhat meek in comparison. The head ecclesiarch was seen as being the sole leader who could speak with the true authority of the emperor himself. And as such, all citizens and servants of the Imperium quickly began to worship his every word as sacred law. Because of their newfound, elevated position within the Byzantine governance of the Imperium, it is of no surprise that they also received the greatest share of the imperial tithe, a form of owed taxation which all planets had to pay in order to continue serving the emperor. This created a great rift between the ecclesiarchy and the other bureaucratic elements of the Imperium, with a particular rivalry appearing with the Adeptus Administratum. The untold billions of scribes and scholars who toil away their days within the great office blocks of the Administratum were primarily responsible for maintaining the many logistical and governmental tasks which were necessary for managing the great iron beast of the Imperium. However, since a great deal of their funding had now been siphoned off to fuel the zealous pyres of the ecclesiarchy, they soon found that organizing and supplying various parts of the Imperium was becoming a simply impossible task. Seeing their failure, the ecclesiarchy soon came to swoop in and relieve the administratum from some of their more secular duties. This granted them with the power to ultimately dictate which wars should be declared, of which sectors should receive the most resources, and of which directives the Imperium as a whole should take. Eventually, this led to the ecclesiarchy to also appoint their own chosen lords and nobles to rule over entire sectors and star systems, essentially solidifying their influence and power over all of imperial space. Their significant rise to power was not entirely tolerated by the fellow organizations of the Imperium. The Administratum had long existed as the central power upon Terra, and they would not meekly watch as their position was stolen out from under them. In response to the actions of the ecclesiarch, those within the Administratum began a large-scale operation to once again bring about their own premiership and to see the retraction of their rivals. Over the course of the 35th millennium, they were somewhat successful, being able to wrangle most of their control back from the Bastion of Faith. As a result of this, however, the new restrictions and interferences of the Administratum soon led the ecclesiarchy to take a rather drastic measure to protect themselves. The head ecclesiarch ordered for the relocation of the entire organization away from Terra and ordained that their new home would be found upon the great cardinal world of Ophelia, the seventh. Aside from Terra and Mars, this planet was perhaps the greatest source of wealth and faith to be found within the Imperium, and it did not take long until its entire populace was dedicated towards a new mission of zealous fury. Free from the influence of Terra, the ecclesiarchy was able to reinvigorate itself, with the majority of tithes being allocated towards the construction of colossal monuments of reverence towards the God Emperor all across the galaxy. In addition, it was decreed that in order for their organization to best serve the masses, that they would require their own dedicated military force, and these men would be known as the Frateris Templars. The original founding of this group dated back to the 32nd millennium, where they were tasked with standing vigil around the great ecclesiarchal palace upon Terra. However, due to the large-scale changes within the Imperium, their new role would be more similar to that of a private army. This army swelled to such a prodigious size that some would claim it to rival that of the Imperial Guard itself. But the ancient texts from this period have been long since lost, and we will never truly know the scale of their manpower. Nevertheless, after several hundred years had passed, the great temples and basilica of Ophelia VII had grown to outshine all others, and yet there was still a desire to return home. The head ecclesiarch at the time, a man known as Grigor XI, ordered for the entire ecclesiarchy to return to Terra, and that the organization could only exist if it stood at the side of the emperor himself. As such, the enormous undertaking of restoring the old halls of the ecclesiarchal palaces ensued. And unfortunately, this required a tremendous injection of funds, all sourced from new tithes sent out across the Imperium. Whilst many worlds were loyal and faithful to these new demands, there were thousands of governors who saw them as being simply outrageous, and they refused to bankrupt their planets to further the unconscionable goals of the Ecclesiarchy. In response to this, the armies of the Fraternis Templars were deployed across the galaxy with the express orders to crush any upstarts who would dare to withhold resources from the most holy of branches within the Imperium. The violence here soon expanded to involve those who dared to speak out against the Ecclesiarchy in any capacity. All across the Imperium, worlds were plunged into the flames of war, with the actions of the Templars becoming increasingly brutal and deadly in their zealotry against any who they claimed as being heretical. As a rather sinister point, due to the sheer volume of resources held by the Ecclesiarchy, as well as from their reverential position, it seemed that their armies could draw from an endless well of supplies, and that none could dare to speak out against their violent actions. While the Ecclesiarchy were once again cementing their control over the Imperium, a series of immense and cataclysmic warp storms began to manifest across the entire galaxy, separating star systems from one another and isolating huge swathes of human territory from the light of the Astronomicon. Hundreds of worlds were overrun by the hellish incursions of demonic forces, with entire populations being dragged into the warp as a succulent treat to the Neverborn. Drukhari raiding parties similarly saw this as a tantalizing opportunity, and their vast pirate fleets slipped out from the webway to ravage entire star systems. Meanwhile, any areas which could still be reached by Imperial forces soon found themselves being subject to the zealous patrols of the ecclesiarchal fleets. The most meek and humble of citizens quickly devolved their usual methods of prayer into self-flagellation and fanatical worship in order to prove their impassioned faith to the God Emperor. Rabid cultists quickly appeared, preaching the most extreme of reasons as to why the galaxy had been plunged into chaos, with there being little hope of peace once again returning to the Imperium. The Fraternis Templars were brutal in their response to these groups, with entire communities being purged by their flames for daring to speak such heretical thoughts into existence. It was not uncommon for these forces to subject vast populations to endure unspeakable acts of mutilation, all to seek some penance for their sacrilegious crimes against the God Emperor. It was here, during this truly chaotic time, that the infamous lord known as Goj Vandaya first rose to prominence. Following a series of brutal assassinations, bribes, and threats from the Fraternis Templars, he managed to secure the positions of both head ecclesiarch as well as master of the administratum. With this dual leadership role, he became the de facto ruler of man, holding the two most powerful and influential positions in the entire Imperium, allowing him to dictate the Imperial war machine to follow his every whim and desire. Unfortunately, his premiership is remembered only as being the worst period of civil war experienced throughout the Imperium since the Horus Heresy, and it is more commonly referred to as his reign of blood. Despite the untold chaos brought about by the terrible age of apostasy, there was a light which emerged from the darkness, as this was to be where the sisterhood first emerged. The huge warp storms which had ravaged the galaxy were beginning to subside, and though many worlds and sectors were still cut off entirely, it seemed that the Imperium would be able to become an interconnected stellar empire once more. A key point to mention here is that Van Dyer was an incredibly paranoid man, and due to his megalomaniacal desire to control all facets of the Imperium, he had dispatched an enormous network of spies to monitor and report any errant cults which may appear. He wished for mankind to worship the Emperor only as he dictated them to, and to stray from his word was perceived to be heresy, with only death acting as a suitable punishment to their crimes. Upon a nondescript agri-world known as San Lior, Van Dyer was informed of a rather small but still stray cult who had devoted their lives towards the faithful reverence of the God Emperor. Whilst initially outraged at their insolence, he soon grew to see this group with a strange sense of fascination. The coven was known as the Daughters of the Emperor, and it was made up of women who led a pure, ascetic life, entrenched only in the spiritual following of their liege, with their utter dedication being placed in their adoration towards their God. Whilst they lived peacefully, it was noted that this group trained endlessly to perfect their skills in battle, seemingly as a route to prove their faith towards the Emperor. Keeping his intentions as a close secret to himself, Van Dyer organized a pilgrimage to meet with this group, and with an armed contingent, he departed to San Leor. Before his official visit, the Fratres Templars first entered the surrounding communities, threatening the inhabitants with executions if they did not worship the very ground which Van Dyer was soon to walk upon. As the High Ecclesiarch arrived, he was met with the forced adoration of his subjects, who at gunpoint lavished him with praise and reverence as the true representative of the God Emperor. When he eventually reached the Daughter's temple, however, he was not graced with the same love. One of their coven expressed that they did not recognize his position of head ecclesiarch as holding any merit towards their faith, and so he would not be permitted to enter their grounds peacefully. While some expected him to fly into an unmatched rage at this rebuttal, he had predicted there to be some initial distrust, and so he promised to prove to the worshippers that he was in fact a true servant to the Emperor. Clutching his rosarius, he ordered one of his bodyguards to shoot him in the chest, claiming that the Emperor had chosen him, and that he would be protected from certain death by his deific grace. With trembling hands, the guard lifted his weapon and let flash an energy blast from his las pistol. The round would have struck Van Dyer in his blackened heart. However, the Lord was consumed by an aura of blinding golden light. As the halo began to fade, it revealed him to still be standing, as confident as ever in his heavenly protection. Seeing this act of God, the sisterhood collectively fell to their knees in reverence for Van Dyer, swearing their fealty to him as the emissary of their liege, and by his will changed their names from the Daughters of the Emperor to the Brides of the Emperor. In truth, this was an orchestrated ploy by the High Lord. The rosarius, which he held onto, was a sacred relic of the ecclesiarchy, which contains within it a mighty energy field, and it was only by its protection that he survived the shot, not that he had any form of graceful shielding from the Emperor. In any case, the brides were instructed to leave the planet, where they became the personal bodyguards of Van Dyer. To them, he was truly seen as one who had been chosen by the Emperor, and so his protection grew to be of paramount importance to them. To support his newfound force, Van Dyer ordered for them to undergo an all-encompassing training regiment, provided by the various masters of the Imperial Guard. In addition, they were to be supplied with the finest of war gear, with their old uniforms being replaced by customized and striking suits of power armor. At the apex of the Reign of Blood, Vandaya had reached an unmatched level of power within not only the Imperium, but also on Holy Terra itself. There were none who could control his whims, and all were subjected to his maniacal wishes, with any opposition being met by accusations of heresy. The great ecclesiarchal palaces upon Terra had fallen into disrepair, as Vandaya was utterly focused on spreading his own rule across the Imperium, as opposed to tending to his own organization's home. Deep within his own chambers, it is said that he would withdraw from official duties for days at a time, where he would sit in a meditative trance before finally lashing outwards in a terrible cacophony of pained wails, manically screeching out hundreds of new legislative or directive actions for the Imperium to take. His paranoid mood swings had been the root cause to many of the more extreme or questionable laws which he had put forward as being necessary in the reverence to the God Emperor. Untold millions of innocents across the galaxy were sentenced to death by immolation for even the faintest suspicion of heresy, and the spiritual shadows cast by these so-called holy fires did not go unnoticed by those who were still loyal to the true teachings of the Emperor. Whilst all this was occurring, a humble preacher known as Sebastian Thor had risen to prominence upon the planet of Dimamar. His teachings were based not around throwing one's life away into the fires of zealotry, but instead he focused on showing that the Emperor would feel compassion and mercy to all who held their faith deeply within their hearts. With his natural talents in oration, Sebastian traveled to the nearby worlds of his sector, spreading his message to all who had been devastated by the overly righteous actions of the Fratres Templars. His message eventually culminated in the formation of the Confederation of Light, a reformist sect which sought to continue Thor's teachings throughout the galaxy. Their followers would espouse the benefits of temperance and patience, with a particular interest in spreading acts of generosity towards one's community, rather than indulging in the exorbitant displays of opulence which had come to mar the public perception of the ecclesiarchy. It did not take long for Vandaya to receive a dispatch from his spy corps, informing him of this upstart group and their rise to power. Thrown into an enraged fury, the ecclesiarch demanded that his armies bring the flames of retribution to Dimamar and to annihilate this foolish preacher for ever daring to speak out against his rule. A fleet was quickly assembled out of the more zealous of Templars, with the express orders of wiping out any who pledged their faith towards the new confederation. Rather shockingly, however, as they emerged from warped travel, the Immaterium itself seemed to buckle, and with a deafening screech, a great storm manifested itself out of unreality, engulfing the numerous ships within its tempestuous maw, which were destined to be utterly destroyed by the arcs of otherworldly energy. Seeing this as a divine message, Sebastian Thor was invigorated with a sense of holy purpose. Furthermore, the wider segmentum had become enamored by his charismatic presence, to the point where his following had swelled to include hundreds of worlds, all of whom saw his word as being faithful and true. Eventually, the Confederation reached a boiling point, and it seemed that the only path left to tread was one which led directly to Holy Terra. As something of a vast pilgrimage, Thor and his followers set out to travel to the very heart of the Imperium, where they would seek to oust the sacrilegious and wayward lord, and to reinstate the ecclesiarchy as a purely spiritual organization, rather than being the all-encompassing military-political machine which it had become. The Confederation officially denounced Vandaya as a traitor to the Imperium, and it now seemed that an outright civil war was all but inevitable. This was only complicated by the commitment of the Fabricator General of the Adeptus Mechanicus, who also stood forward to back Thor. Additionally, many Space Marine chapters had grown weary from hearing tales of Van Dyer's actions, and so they, too, called for his abdication, as his tyrannical rule had persisted for far too long. In response, Van Dyer, and the entire Imperium by extension, declared the Marines, Mechanicus, and Confederation as traitors. The Fraternis Templars were ordered to eliminate all heretical forces wherever they were encountered, and to spare none in their righteous crusade against any who stood against them. This was not a simple task to complete, however, and many of his subordinates finally refused to take action against the Emperor's own angels. These insolent rebels, however, were not provided with an opportunity to repent for their sins, and any who failed to take up their arms in the name of the Ecclesiarch were rounded up and burned at the stake. After their long voyage, the crusading forces of the Confederation finally reached Holy Terra. The Space Marines of the Imperial Fists, Black Templars, Soul Drinkers, and Firehawks had assembled a task force to be deployed via drop pods into the heart of the Ecclesiarchal Palace, with the expectation being that Van Dyer would only have a defensive force made up of Fratris Templars at his disposal. Instead, the Marines landed into a kill zone. They saw legions of the heavily armored warrior women, the brides of the Emperor, standing ready and eager to defend Van Dyer. The sisters' power armor was superbly constructed for them, being adorned with imperial icons of faith, and in their hands they wielded the finest of bolt guns, flamers, and plasma weapons, which they unleashed into the Marines with impassioned fury. Since the dark days of the Horus Heresy, none thought that war would once again ravage the sanctity of the Imperial Palace. And yet, through the actions of Van Dyer, it seemed that the very heart of the Imperium was once again breaking. The two armies were quickly ground into a stalemate, with heavy casualties being sustained by both sides from the sheer weight of ordnance and overwhelming fire brought upon them. Neither seemed able to gain any significant ground against the other. And yet, retreat was simply not an option for this terminable conflict. The days dragged into weeks, and then months, with more and more troops dying in the ornate rubble of the once grand Imperial Palace. Seeing the sheer magnitude of this conflict, not only for its material loss, but also for its spiritual significance, a fabled centurion of the Adeptus Custodes took it upon himself to end the carnage at the Emperor's doorstep. The custodian moved through the halls of the Ecclesiarchal Palace, unhindered by the chaos of war, and sought out the leader of Van Dyer's bodyguard, a sister known as Alicia Dominica. As a custodian guard, he was seen as speaking and acting with the sole interests of the Emperor in mind, and that his mission would be of the utmost importance for enacting his will. Initially, he and his fellow guards petitioned Alicia and her sisters to end this conflict by abandoning Van Dyer and to join with the true servants of the Imperium. They claimed that the Ecclesiarch did not speak for the Emperor, and that he was a wayward traitor who would only bring the Imperium low with his actions. After hours of debate, it became clear that the sisters would not relent on their position, and so the centurion decided that it was time to play his final card. The custodes summoned Alicia to join him in the heart of the Imperial Palace, to stand before the Golden Throne and witness the majesty of the Emperor in his flesh. He left his fellow custodians as hostages to the sisters, and then led Alicia and five of her companions into the Sanctum Imperialis to bask in the glory of the Emperor's presence. None have ever known exactly what transpired before the Emperor. History does not tell of words which were spoken, nor for how long they stood before his grace. But once their parley was over, and the eternity gates opened once more, Alicia and her sisters are said to have walked out with blazing flames of rage blaring out from their eyes. Alicia Dominica returned to her sisters and denounced Vandaya as a traitor. With a sorrowful, near broken heart, she explained the sheer levels of treachery and corruption which Vandaya had been abusing, and how even his first act of defying death had been a ruse to gain their support. She renounced her coven, claiming that they had all been tainted and perverted to suit his traitorous reign, and so instead the sisters reclaimed their name as the daughters of the emperor, vowing to return to their old ways of faith, regardless of who stood at the head of the Imperium. She then led a contingent of sisters straight to Vandaya's chamber and spoke the following words to the corrupted lord.
You have committed the ultimate heresy. Not only have you turned your back on the Emperor and stepped from his light, you have profaned his name and almost destroyed everything he has striven to build. You have perverted and twisted the path he has laid for mankind to tread. As your own decrees have stated, there can be no mercy for such a crime, no pity for such a criminal. I renounce your lordship. You walk in the darkness and cannot be allowed to live. Your sentence has been long overdue, and now it is time for you to die.
With these words, she drew her power sword, which crackled and singed the air itself as it was activated. Vandaya glanced back from his desk, shaking his head in disagreement, and simply whispered out, "I don't have time to die. I'm too busy." With a slash of her blade, Vandaya was beheaded, and the rain of blood came to its deathly end. With the death of Vandaya, the ecclesiarchy and administratum were reformed back into their original separate organizations. Sebastian Thor was appointed as the head ecclesiarch, and he quickly set about to ensure that an event of this magnitude could never occur again. He formed the Ordo Hereticus, a subsect of the infamous Inquisition, with its task being to root out corruption within the Imperium and to ensure that none may dare to oppose the will of the Emperor again. Thor also passed the Decree Passive, which forbade the ecclesiarchy from ever having men-at-arms as a military force. This disbanded the Fratres Templars, who were almost entirely eliminated for their acts of zealotry committed against the Imperium. The specific wording of this decree, however, thankfully did not include any objections to women serving in their armed forces. As such, the daughters of the Emperor quickly stepped forward to take up their place as the new army of the ecclesiarchy. With their new role, they changed their titles, being renamed as the Adepta Sororitas, with the Sisters of Battle acting as their militant arm. They were trained to the very limits of what a non-modified human could achieve. And with their unmatched faith in the Emperor, they could now stand as a prodigious force against the heretical enemies of man. Shortly after adopting their new name, the sisters set out on a mighty crusade, with the conflicts being known as the Wars of Faith. And they were intended to bring the Emperor's light back to the regions of the galaxy, which had been ravaged by not only the warp storms, but also from Vandaya's bloody reign. It was during this period of reformation that the sisterhood was divided between the previously mentioned non-militant and militant orders. The broad skill set of their organization was simply too great to ignore, and it was seen as wasteful to commit every sister to the crusading fleets. As such, some of the more scholarly or pious of sisters were chosen to act as the heads of the peaceful sects, such as with the Orders Pronatus, who are entrusted with safeguarding the various artifacts and relics of the ecclesiarchy. Nevertheless, in a galaxy as treacherous as ours, there was a dire need for an army who could bring the fires of holy faith to mankind's numerous enemies. With this in mind, the Sisters of Battle stood ready to act as the exemplars of the Emperor's spirit, and they would burn his name into the very stars should it be asked of them. Alicia Dominica was chosen as the righteous leader of the entire organization, and it would be directed from both the great ecclesiarchal palace upon Holy Terra, as well as from the fortified cardinal world of Ophelia VII. As the years passed, it soon became evident that the vast armies of the Sisterhood would be more effective if they could spread their wings across the galaxy, fighting as separate forces throughout the many war zones of the Imperium. As such, the successor of Sebastian Thor, Ecclesiarch Alexis XXII, ordained the founding of four orders, with their leaders being drawn from the companions of Alicia Dominica, who accompanied her during her visit with the God Emperor. These would be the Orders of the Ebon Chalice, of the Valorous Heart, of the Argent Shroud, and of the Fiery Heart. During the 38th millennia, two more orders were founded to honor the final remaining companions, and these were the orders of the Bloody Rose and of the Sacred Rose. Perhaps to placate the High Lords, Thor also decreed that the Sisters of Battle should act as the chamber militant of the Ordo Hereticus, innately tying the two organizations together. This act, known as the Convocation of Nephilim, may have been done to ensure that the sisters are forever kept in line by the Inquisition, who will go to any lengths to ensure that their actions adhere to the Emperor's will. It is highly unlikely that this would be a necessary action to take, however, since, as we are all aware, there are perhaps none who are more faithful adherents to the Emperor than of the Sisterhood. Additionally, forming the Sisters of Battle was clearly a way to get around the decree passive and allowed the ecclesiarchy to still hold a military force. As such, perhaps tying them to the Inquisition meant that this exploit would be overlooked, as the Ordo Hereticus would surely be pleased to have such an army of loyal and zealous warriors behind them, regardless of what decrees it may break. Alternatively, some believe that Alicia Dominica only agreed to this because it fell in line with what the Emperor imparted to her within the Imperial Palace. They claim that the task given to the sisters was of such dire importance that they were willing to give up their independence and fall in line with the Inquisition just to see the Emperor's mission through to its bloody end. In any case, their fervent faith in the Emperor should be all the assurance needed for those who may doubt their loyalties. The sisters are utterly fanatical towards worshipping the Emperor, and all who may stand to oppose him will be met with nothing but endless fire and a holy fury.